Balloons all over the place. Yes, we do. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports here on Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found at blogtalkradio.com 7 days a week, starting, of course, with Monday, Vito Esposito and Big Al with the Vito Esposito and Big Al Show, or it's the Vito Esposito Show featuring Big Al. How's that? And then, of course, Tuesdays, where right now, we got no one, but Vito's going to be sort of filling in. Wednesdays, of course, me, Hank Jones, 5:30 or 6 o'clock, just depending on the week, what's going on. Thursdays, guess what? Right now, that's going to be sort of me sort of filling in the same way Vito's going to be doing on Tuesdays. And that's going to be happening on Fridays as well. We've had a couple defections, if you will. Not defections. On Tuesdays, Eric has cut back to one day. Paul has moved on, and Andrew has had some stuff going on. So right now, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays are kind of, you know, iffy. Vito might be taking Fridays, though. Absolutely taking Fridays. That would be awesome. Of course, Saturday nights, midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christy revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is in. He absolutely is with the Cross and Crescent discussion. That's a lot of stuff going on. Tell you what, there's lots of ways to reach out to us. Every day you can call in 319-527-6706. Save that in your phone. Or you can log in. Get an account on blogtalkradio.com. It's free. Then when you log in, you can get into the chat room and be identified as your own self. And you can also follow us. So when you get in, you follow the show. Guess what happens then? You get emails from Blog Talk Radio telling you, hey, this show is coming up. It's true, and I get those emails. I see them all the time. Or, you know what? If you want to email any of us, we'll give out our emails. Mine is hjpsports1980@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter, @hpolysports. couple people that do that. Sue from New Mexico, who's on the phones listening right now, as well as my big sister is also listening right now. Or you can come, like as I said, into the chat room. IndieHawk KB is there currently. So that's us, Global Patriot Radio. I am hanging out here in the official Hank Jones Polysports Space Force Observation Outpost, remote outpost. Little Aussie running around like a maniac. Got her food a little late today, 5:06, but what the heck. And, of course, my better half, Hank's better half, is, third person. Oh, my God. Anyway, she's over on her in Acoustic Hankland doing her new job and loving it. Today's first Internet Laughy is from the Babylon Bee, and this is good. It's good. Congress members to wear barcodes so lobbyists can scan prices and oh, this next one's better. This is possibly the best Laughy of all time. I'm going to try and get in an effort to appeal to socialists. Mike Lindell introduces our pillow. It's not just what it says, folks. You got to see the picture. He's like cuddling this little pillow. It's absolutely a scream. Our pillow. There'll be another socialist note later that is very important. So let's get to our obituaries. Last Wednesday, we lost former Tuskegee Airman pilot and radio personality Oscar Lawton Wilkerson at the age of 96, just a day before his 97th birthday. Wilkie, as he was known, worked at WBEE Radio in Harvey, Illinois, Chicago suburb. Following his graduation from Midwest Broadcasting School, he hosted his own show, Wilk's World. Later served as community relations director and program director. He moved on to one of the iconic Chicago radio stations, WMAQ, until his retirement. Any of you of my vintage that grew up in Chicago, you'll remember when the phone rings, you're supposed to answer, WMAQ is going to make me rich. I don't know if anybody ever got rich doing that, but I heard a guy one time answer a payphone that way. After retirement, Oscar Lawton Wilkerson volunteered with the Chicago chapter of former Tuskegee Airmen, which included helping minority and at-risk youth learn to fly through the Young Eagles program. And then also that day, we lost songwriter Burt Bacharach. Now, you may remember this song. I would hope you would. It's from the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Sung by B.J. Thomas. He also wrote Walk On By, made most famous by Dionne Warwick, but also done by Isaac Hayes. He also did Arthur's theme. That was just three of his huge, and I mean huge, catalog of songs. He won 6 Grammy Awards. He was married several times, including to Angie Dickinson. And they, I don't know if people know, they had a daughter who was autistic. Her name was Nikki, and he wrote a song just called Nikki. It was titled In Her Name. Let me tell you something. That song was actually then serving as a theme song for many years for the ABC Movie of the Week. Remember, you see an ABC Movie of the Week or Tuesday Movie of the Week? Give me a taste if you don't remember.
Motion picture produced especially for ABC. Tonight on the Movie of the Week. A ghost town, a man, a chance for people to be what they've never been. Brian Keith.
You don't look anything like a teacher to me.
Juliet Prowse.
I just don't want anybody to call me an ex-con again, ever.
William Wyndham. Second Chance. ABC presents the Movie of the Week.
You remember when they did those? I mean, and the thing is, if mom watched it or dad or big sister or big brother or whoever watched it, everybody watched it because you didn't have six TVs in your house and nobody was sitting on their phones. So, I mean, that was big stuff, the movie of the week. Now, you look at them now and they're kind of cheese ball. But actually, so to think about that, he wrote a song dedicated to his daughter and it was beautiful enough that they used it for a theme song. Now, they jazzed it up a bit and whatnot, but and I remember there was a classic Pray for the Wildcats with Andy Griffith and William Shatner and Robert Reed and Angie Dickinson, by the way. I bought a DVD of that, by the way, for like $35. Probably like a pirate off of VHS. But, yeah, I did it back when my PayPal account had money in it. So, yeah, the movie of the week, and he wrote that theme. Thursday we lost Demetrius Stanley, former OSU Buckeye. Also played in the CFL, the USFL. He was former wide receiver, lost to prostate cancer at age 48. He was on the 1996 Buckeyes team that was ranked number one most of the season until they had that upset loss to Michigan. Ended up only going to the Rose Bowl. Then they finished number two. They beat Arizona State in that game in that very exciting finish. And then Florida ended up being number one at the end of the year. And Friday, we lost a longtime NFL assistant coach, Larry Coyer, age 79. He'd been ill for a while, although they didn't list a cause. But he played college football at Marshall, and then he began his coaching career there as an assistant. He was actually the defensive coordinator, believe it or not, of my beloved Hawkeyes during the Bob Cummings years. Remember that? Like, there were times for Iowa fans, they looked to be on the verge of relevance again, but they'd come up just short during the Cummings years. Yeah, it wasn't until Hayden got there. But Bob Cummings set the table. For those that are super Hayden fans, I agree that Hayden was the one who, you know, resurrected the program. But Bob Cummings did set the table. We also lost a noted director, British film director Hugh Hudson at age 86. Some of his films, Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes, Lost Angels, My Life So Far. And then, of course, the Oscar-winning Chariots of Fire. Ironically, he did not win as best director. That went to Warren Beatty for Reds. How in the hell that happened is anybody's guess. I mean, if I were told I had to watch Reds again for like even 10 seconds, I'd buy earplugs and a sleep mask, even if they said it's just 10 seconds. I mean, that movie, I mean, it might be some kind of cinematic achievement, but whoa, what a snoozer. Saturday saw the death of Brianna, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, G-H-E-Y, so I'll say gay, guy, gahey, age 16, who was stabbed to death in a park in England. Now, whole claim to fame is that she was transgender, E was whatever, which, of course, has elicited a crap ton of virtue signaling. In any event, it is a terrible loss for her family. 16 is too soon, and while both sides of the trans issue will argue endlessly, the fact remains, parents have lost a 16-year-old that they raised and nurtured, and that's terrible. Sunday, we lost former Canadian pro wrestler, actor, and chief of the Mohawk of Kahnawake Nation, Billy Two Rivers, at age 87. He had several tag team titles, as well as the Canadian International Heavyweight Championship before he retired from wrestling in 1977. And Monday, we lost former NFL offensive lineman, Conrad Dobler, age 72. He spent most of his career with the St. Louis Cardinals. He was noted for his use of dirty and unsportsmanlike tactics, which he openly acknowledged, by the way. An interesting side note, he was disabled from his football career, couldn't move well. His wife was paralyzed. She fell from a hammock. So they were unable to continue paying for college for their two children. So a pro golfer heard about it via ESPN, ended up paying for them to finish college. Guess who that was? That was Phil Mickelson. Phil's come under a lot of fire for his, you know, going to the Live Tour, but let's not forget, people have reached out. He reached out and paid for their kids to go to college. Yesterday, we lost retired thoroughbred trainer John Veach, age 76. He trained Devonna Dale, the American champion three-year-old filly of 1978, won all the original and later versions of the Filly Triple Crown. He also trained Aladar, who that same year had the famous Triple Crown duel with Triple Crown winner Affirmed. We lost Greg McMacken, former college football coach, made his biggest mark at Miami, Florida, defensive coordinator, where he coached Warren Sapp and Ray Lewis, among others. finally, we lost that day pro wrestler, former pro wrestler and wrestling promoter Jerry Jarrett, the father of current wrestler Jeff Jarrett. Most wrestling fans would know who he is. After a pretty good wrestling career in the NWA's Mid-South area, he entered into full-time promoting. He founded the CWA, which was the Continental Wrestling Association. There he was a pioneer, believe it or not, of using music to accompany wrestlers as they approached the ring. Most notably, the Fabulous Freebirds, Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy, and Buddy Roberts. They wanted to use that classic Lynyrd Skynyrd song for their entrance. And then he later merged it with Fritz Von Erich's world-class champion promotion. Sold it in 1995. He worked on a deal to acquire WCW, believe it or not, and try and return it to profitability. Then Vince McMahon and WWE or WWF stepped in at that time. WCW had lost its TV contracts. Ironically, with the Turner Broadcasting channels, Turner didn't own them at that time, and Eddie no longer owned WCW. So, but that was weird. WCW was owned by Time Warner, and Time Warner canceled their TV contracts. And then today, we lost an American sex symbol and icon. Raquel Welch has died at the age of 82, quote, after a brief illness. It's actually hard to believe she's gone because, frankly, it was hard to believe she was in her 80s. I mean, yes, she was beautiful and sexy, but she was also timeless and seemingly ageless. The man of the movie, Fantastic Voyage, 1 Million Years B.C., Fuzz, whatever, you name it, she wowed the male audience, at least from a purely aesthetic standpoint. She also did receive some favorable reviews for much of her work. And when film or TV stuff got panned, rarely was it solely based on her performance. It's usually, you know, like crappy plot, et cetera. As I said, yeah, she seemed ageless and timeless. Our area, my area in Orlando area, suffered another loss. You won't hear about it unless you happen to know her. Her name was Emma. She was a young girl who came to our former church while my wife was youth director there. She was engaging and funny and sweet, and she had almost no fear. There was a time when she was in the youth choir, and one of the kids didn't want to sing a part that they had been practicing. So this girl, Emma, just stepped up and did it. She just didn't have any fear. She got confirmed there. She took part in youth activities. Then when she was 14, it was discovered that she had bone cancer. At that age, you know, it's an iffy thing what could happen. It spread to her lungs and elsewhere. My wife and I kept saying to each other, every time we got a new development that we heard, it was like, can this kid catch a break? But she did. She persevered. She danced. She developed friendships. She impacted a whole church congregation, frankly. Anyway, over the weekend, she was taken to the hospital with a blood clot in her lungs. And then God took her Sunday morning. And as one friend said, we prayed and asked God to save her and cure her with each development. Ultimately, God said no to us, but God said yes to Emma. Emma is dancing with joy in heaven. After 11 years, and at just 25 years old, it's still unfathomable to me that this could happen to such a sweet kid. But we must remember, God came to us in the person of Jesus to save us because he loves us, and now he comforts Emma. And so that's what must comfort us. So I say, God bless you, Emma. Inspired a lot of love. And now a lot of heartbreak for a while. Let's move on, please. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and messaging and answering service. Services for your medical clinic, hospital clinic, service companies, law offices, real estate offices, management companies, government entities. They can work with anyone. They can figure out what needs to be done for you. They'll get the job done. Don't forget, they can work with remote staff as well. And if you are one who likes doing that kind of work, remote work, you might also might consider them for employment. So give them a call, 800-555-3738, or go ahead and visit their website, lionscommunications.com. So here's another internet laughy that, I don't know if you know, I talk occasionally about Tim Tapp. He's got a show, another, not on part of Global Patriot, but his own show on Blog Talk Radio called Tap Into the Truth. He has this roving, you know, I don't use him, but Vito and others use him. It's like a rotating picture gallery. And his says, it's just classic, absolutely classic. It's one of the things I found on there. It's perfectly said. Says, if I had a dollar for every time socialism worked, I would have $0. Coincidentally, if socialism worked, I would also have $0. I mean, it perfectly says it, perfectly encapsulated, absolutely perfectly encapsulated. So let's get to our news and notes, et cetera. Here's a shocker from Georgia. Fulton County Superior Court judge has ordered the release of portions of a special grand jury report, including a section, quote, in which the special purpose grand jury discuss its concern that some witnesses may have lied under oath. Gee, people lying under oath in an investigation of election fraud. By the way, it wasn't an investigation of someone seeking. Or it was, yeah. It was an investigation of someone seeking an investigation of election fraud. Anyway, the judge ruled that most of the proceedings will remain under wraps in order not to hinder the overall progress of the investigation. Judge Robert McBurney said it would hinder the investigation being conducted by Fulton County DA Fannie Willis. Yeah, prepare for early 2024 release of this stuff. This next observation from the Epoch Times, I'm just going to read you because I can't decide if it's hilarious, hypocritical, ironic, or just if it's just flat-out lunacy. I just can't decide. I really can't. Eugene, Oregon bans natural gas hookups in new residences. After more than 2 years of debate, the City Council of Eugene, Oregon voted on February 6th to ban natural gas hookups in new residential construction, becoming the state's first city to prohibit new homes from using gas furnaces, water heaters, or appliances. During a closed meeting, the council first decided to deny a request by opponents to put the issue on the May ballot. According to DHM research, 70% of those surveyed opposed the ban. The council then voted 5-3 in favor, citing concerns about climate change and public health, and saying the ban would reduce carbon emissions and eliminate the air quality hazards of gas stoves. Unbelievable. Eugene Mayor Lucy Venus applauded the move. We have a governor who has pledged to build 36,000 new houses a year, she said in a public statement after the meeting. We do not want those houses with natural gas hookups. And we can lead the way in the city of Eugene to say, this is how it's done. Strong opposition. Councilor Mike Clark voted no, claiming the change will discourage developers as well as anger the many voters who were strongly opposed and wanted the issue on the ballot. Sid Lycan, executive director of the Western Oregon Builders Association, echoed the concerns. Our members are committed to helping create the housing our community needs to solve our homelessness and affordability crisis. We believe that actions like the surprise vote the Eugene councilors took will do little to actually improve our climate and significantly hurt our local builders' ability to create housing that is truly affordable for our neighbors. The Western Oregon Builders Association will work with the opposition to repeal the measure. This extreme policy to end energy choice was adopted despite a torrent of public testimony against the ban from local businesses, restaurant operators, and average citizens. This ban is certain to worsen the housing shortage and impose prohibitive costs on small businesses struggling to recover from the pandemic. NW Natural, which supplies natural gas to more than 2.5 million Oregon homes, or 80% of the natural gas in the state, fought the ban, claiming it limits energy choice and that the science does not support it. It has been alarming to see the extent to which some organizations will go to make misleading or inaccurate claims based on poorly constructed studies that are used to justify sweeping conclusions to support electrification, the company wrote. This diminishes the importance of rooting policy in sound science. The provider cited a study that says ventilation plays a key role in mitigating cooking-related air emissions that come from both gas and electric stoves. This is why kitchen exhaust has been required for all new homes in Oregon for many years, whether they have gas or electric cooking. But supporters of the ban are just getting started. Councilor Jennifer Yeh called the resolution just a first step to a fossil fuel-free Eugene. It's going to be slow, and it's going to take us decades, but we have to start moving, and this is that movement. Eugene's ban comes just as the furor had subsided over Consumer Product Safety Commission member Richard Trumka Jr.'s suggestion that the agency should develop new regulations on gas stove emissions and shouldn't rule out an end to sales of the product. As of 2020, about 38% of the country's households used natural gas for cooking, according to census data from the U.S. Energy Information Administration. This is a hidden hazard, Trumka said in an interview with Bloomberg. Any option is on the table. Products that can't be made safe can be banned. His statement puts gas stoves at the center of the culture wars. Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat West Virginia, said in a post on Twitter that a gas stove ban would be, quote, a recipe for disaster. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis posted a photo of a gas stove on the Gadsden flag. If the CPSC really wanted to do something about public health, it would ban cigarettes or automobiles long before it moved on to address stoves, said Mike McKenna, a GOP energy lobbyist. It's transparently political. CPSC Chair Alexander Hone-Sarek quickly disavowed the idea of a federal gas stove ban, but acknowledged research finding that gas stoves may pose air quality hazards. The commission plans to launch information gathering and public comment activities into the hazards posed by gas stoves later this winter, barring the manufacture or import of gas stoves and setting standards on emissions from the appliances. Meanwhile, the battle over gas stove bans is spreading like wildfire in state and local governments. Eugene is among nearly 100 local municipalities across the nation working to ban the use of natural gas in new residential constructions, even as more than a dozen states have prohibited such bans. Okay, here's my first observation. I did a mission trip to Madagascar in 2005, and we went to numerous places up in the mountains, in the city, out in the country. So we went to this one area. It was a mountain-type village. I imagine they get pretty cold in the winter, colder than, you know, the average within the country. One guy was so proud of his indoor fire pit. And everyone in the village had started building indoor fire pits with no ventilation, maybe one window. And as you walked around, the whole town was hacking their lungs out. So, yeah, ventilation is kind of key. A second observation. I'll tell you what it is. This is absurd. This is a war on fossil fuel, maybe a secondary war on the appliance industry. Nothing more, nothing less. Even when they do break out their convoluted and manipulated version of the science, then they walk it back or use the dreaded, it could take years, but, alert, I used air quotes around the science and air quotes around it could take years, but. So lesson number one, when a liberal says it could take years, but, it means two things. Lesson number one, first, they have no real knowledge of the given piece of ideology and or agenda they're proposing beyond I heard it somewhere or scientists say or according to noted experts. Second, they're telepathically telling you, you dumb voters need to keep me around to see this thing through. Third observation. From which Twilight Zone episode did this come? Again, I really don't know if we are supposed to be mad at this, completely up in arms about it, laugh at it, or laugh hysterically. I mean, I cannot decide. But, I mean, it's just, it's absurd. Banning gas, natural gas stoves. I mean, why not just go through and rip out every natural gas line in the state? Well, here's good news. The FDA has announced a recall of tens of thousands of unapproved COVID test kits. This is also from the Epic Times, of course, one of my favorites, goes to. So, yeah, they issued more than 56,000 rapid tests last week, recall, because they were not distributed with the proper clearance from the FDA, according to an announcement posted on its website. 56,000 skip-pack medical labs SARS-CoV-2 antigen rapid test kits are being recalled by its maker, Universal Meditech, because, quote, the products were distributed without appropriate pre-market clearance or approval, which potentially could result in inaccurate test results due to lack of performance evaluation by the FDA. People who have it should stop using the device and contacting the distributor for a return, according to the notice. They were made between October and December of 2021 and redistributed in January of 2022. So now we're recalling COVID stuff. By the way, send a little prayer for Hawkeye Mike. Hawkeye Mike is not on the program today. You might have noticed I didn't even mention that he would or would not be. But Hawkeye Mike informed us that he has COVID. He seems to be doing okay. He was given Pavlovix or whatever, Paxlovid. So he should be doing okay. I've regretted to inform him that that special COVID pay that everybody could get, that sunsetted at the end of 2021, I believe, or late 2020, actually, I think, or March or something. But yeah, he's not going to get that COVID pay, that free COVID pay. By the way, I mentioned Tim Tapp before. Go to this when you're done or whatever. Go to Tap Into Truth. That's Tim's show, and he did an excellent piece on the Paycheck Protection Plan loans. Now, as I said, full disclosure, my company received one. We did all the necessary stuff to not, you know, to have the debt forgiven, i.e., we spent it on payroll. But now, they are now decided that anybody loans $100,000 or less that did not qualify for forgiveness, they're not going to pursue. So now I can say I really know what it's like to have had student debt and paid it off and then find out everybody else is getting a free ride. Same thing. I mean, we did what was necessary, did all the necessary stuff. But now people who didn't do anything or didn't qualify, they're getting forgiven anyway. It's just unbelievable. So anyway, give Tim a listen on that. So anyway, Universal Meditech is notifying its distributors and customers by phone and email and arranging for return of all recalled products. There have actually been a number of recalls for COVID test kits. I mean, I'm at this stage. Either you'll get it or you won't. It's simple as that. If you haven't been vaccinated by now, don't let anybody tell you you need to. I did it, and you all know why. Wanted to make sure I could go to my daughter's wedding in Seattle, which is Eugene Light, I guess you could say. They haven't banned gas stoves there yet, but don't think they haven't talked about it. But yeah. More stuff. And we're, of course, all the COVID vaccine troubles. I am going to report on that at some point. Probably my friend Rich that could not come on. I think I would have him come on and explain a lot of that. That would be the best way to do it. So, yeah, FDA recalling. You know. Okay, here's a good one. Here's a good one. You're going to love this story. Oh, God, this is just... John Fetterman, Senator John Fetterman. Supposedly, here's Charlie Brown's teacher voice when people talk to him. Or maybe he's just talking to himself. Anybody think of that? Here's a quick story version of it from Patriot News Journal. So, or Journal Newsletter. You know, Fetterman is the guy, Dr. Oz ran against him. And, you know, they didn't do the debate until pretty much all the early voting was done. People say enabled Fetterman to beat Oz. As Hawkeye Mike noted, though, Oz never really had any kind of platform. I mean, if you know what Oz's platform was, please let somebody know. It says, as we always say, There are consequences to elections, and the state of Pennsylvania might soon learn this the hard way. Despite all the troubling signs, voters elected Democrat John Fetterman to the U.S. Senate. The man suffered a stroke last year and had clearly not recovered by the time of the election. Even during his swearing-in, he looked as if he had one foot in the grave. This week, he was rushed to the hospital over reports of feeling lightheaded. He has yet to be released from the hospital, and reports are more troubling than the left is willing to admit. He has described his severe hearing disability as causing him to hear the voice of the teacher from the Peanuts cartoon when listening to people speak. He's struggled to adjust to life in the Senate, given the challenges of recovering from his stroke and the need for technological tools to help him conduct conversations with staff and colleagues. Oh, yeah. And then it says, oh, this guy's totally fine. Apparently, his stroke was so severe it left him unable to actually listen to people. When people hear him, it sounds like to him like the teacher from the Peanuts cartoon. A lot of people say it's to get his wife in, that she's going to be the one to take over. Like they say here, why do we need competent senators anyway, right? They just have to vote yes to whatever lobbyists ask for. Yeah, I mean, the fact that nobody is demanding he step down at this point. What I want to know is, really, I want to know this. Who exactly determined that's what he was hearing? I mean, did he just come out one day and say, what the hell, stop talking like Charlie Brown's teacher? I mean, how the hell? How the hell they determined that? That was how he was hearing things. I mean, just because he sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher doesn't mean the rest of us do. Doesn't mean that that's what he's hearing. I know. Follow the science. In this case, I can tell you what the science says. I can tell you exactly what the science says. It says this. I used to love that. And now we have a senator that hears in Charlie Brown teacher language and probably speaks in Charlie Brown teacher language. I'm not making fun of the fact that I'm making light, not of the stroke, but of the fact that we have a president who's clearly suffering from cognitive difficulties at best and dementia at worst. A president, literally a president, suffering from that. And then we have a senator who hears and speaks in Charlie Brown's teacher language. So Al, our Monday co-host, sent out a video this week of former ICE director Tom Homan as he appeared before some House committee that allowed AOC to speak. By the way, Andrew Wilkow, he's on Sirius XM's Patriots channel, he said it best. AOC is best viewed without sound. It's a perfect description of her. I admit, she's pleasant to look at sometimes, but when she opens her mouth, it's like, whoa. Anywho, AOC thought it was clever for her to grill Tom Homan on immigration policy, specifically with regard to separating parents and minor children when they are apprehended while crossing the U.S. border illegally. And here is that exchange. It's a great, great exchange. And Tom Homan, of course, absolutely nails it with AOC. So give us a listen.
How did we get to this point where we take children out of mothers and fathers' arms? Here is the memo that I would like to submit to the congressional record.
What is the name of that?
It is a memorandum for the secretary from Homeland Security.
Date.
April 23rd, 2018, subject increasing prosecutions of immigration violations.
Without objection.
And so I looked at this memo, and it seems like this is the source of it. But I would like to note that here it says the official recommendation. There were three different options presented. The third included the option for family separation. This initiative would pursue prosecution of all amenable adults, including those presenting with a family unit. Mr. Homan, your name is on this. Is this correct?
Yes, I signed that memo.
And so the recommendation, of the many that you recommended family separation.
I recommended zero tolerance.
Which includes family separation.
the same as is whatever U.S. citizen parent gets arrested when they're with a child.
Zero tolerance was interpreted as the policy that separated children from their
parents. If I get arrested for DUI and I have a young child in a car, I'm going to be separated. When I was a police officer in New York and I arrested a father for domestic violence, I separated that father from his family.
Mr. Holman, with all due respect, legal asylees are not charged with any crime.
When you're in the country illegally, it's violation 8 United States Code 1325.
Seeking asylum is legal.
If you want to seek asylum, you go through the port of entry, do it the legal way. The Attorney General of the United States has made that clear.
Okay.
So that was former ICE Director Tom Holman. It's also a video that you can see, so it's not just audio. But so AOC is trying to grill him. So why does AOC continually embarrass herself like this? I mean, I get that she's virtue signaling, and I get that she really believes she's giving people one of those gotcha moments. Here's the fact. She's not. She sounds stupid. She's obviously either ignorant of the facts of law or simply unprepared when she gets to the floor to quote-unquote grill these people. Jim Rome's done a sports talk show for years, and love him or hate him, I'm somewhere in between. He has some funny stuff. Like he used to play that thing of the Miss America or Miss USA or whatever, the contestant who, during one of her speaking moments, she gave that stupid speech about into Iraq and into Afghanistan, and probably didn't realize through his liberal colored eyeballs that the true incarnation of that would be sent to Congress one day. I mean, seriously, AOC's whole collective soundbite can be summed up thusly. In the America, corporate greed makes children be separated from their parents and causes global warming and greedy corporations who make gas stoves. I mean, that's seriously, she is that stupid. And she literally proves it when she speaks. It's terrible. It's almost sad because she actually does know how to smile. So she must have some kind of pleasant and positive emotional moments. But seriously, why would God make someone whose positive emotional moments consist of blathering on idiotically against something that doesn't factually exist, even in Iraq? Think about this. She asked to be entered. She asked for something to be entered into the congressional record, a memo that effectively amounts to instructing ICE and other border officials to follow the law and protect children. Now, do we know why they do that? Most people don't. Most people don't. It's not to penalize parents. It's not to penalize children. It's to keep children away from other, in a gen pop, or put it, I mean, in Orlando, there are homeless ministries and organizations that separate fathers from children in certain circumstances. You know, you can't just have kids mixing in the gen pop, like in showers or whatever. So she actually asked this, though, to be entered into the congressional record, which is a memo that basically instructs ICE and other border officials to follow the law and protect children. But in her eyes, she actually believed she was discovering and revealing to the world some sinister plan to kidnap and lock up children seeking asylum. Only in the Iraq, I tell you. Only in the Iraq. That's going to be my new thing. So if someone's really stupid or out to lunch, I'm just going to say only in the Iraq or in the Iraq. Let's get to the Super Bowl. We're not going to have much sports today, by the way. That's by design because I didn't really feel like it. So last Sunday, the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Philadelphia Eagles in Super Bowl 57. On a late field goal, 38-35. It did not come without controversy. Late in the game, a defensive holding penalty was called against Eagles defensive back James Bradbury, who admitted to the call for holding before the pass was thrown to Chiefs wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster in the end zone. The controversy is not whether or not it was a hold, because strictly speaking, it was. But as many folks pointed out, there hadn't been a holding call all game. And so it came at a rather inopportune time, giving the Chiefs new life rather than punting or going for a long field goal. Let's not forget, their kicker, Harrison Butker, had missed a field goal attempt earlier in the game, about 42 yards, if I remember. So while we have the KC Chiefs as new Super Bowl champs, much like last year's game, it comes on the heels of a very ill-timed penalty assessment where the problem wasn't the call, but the lack of that type of call during the rest of the game, consistency. Super Bowl ads and controversy. Tubi TV, which gave viewers the impression that someone sat on their remote and interrupted the game feed. And then there was the He Gets Us ad, which, by the way, AOC drew scorn from AOC. Also drew the ire of the New Republic, by the way, which used to be conservative, but Trump.
Yeah.
So the FBI did another search and potentially destroy mission at the Indiana home of former Vice President Mike Pence. Boy, what a find. A whole one page of document, not plural, mind you, but singular, one document marked classified, attached to six pages that were not marked classified. Now, where I'm stumped is whether or not this is real, whether it's cover for Dopey Joe and La Dopey Nostra, or a way to cover up for the fact that up until this recent discovery, Mike Pence's name was non-existent, all but non-existent, into subpoenas, allegations, and rumors associated with January 6th, and frankly, the whole Trump presidency, whether it was the Russia collusion hoax or anything else. Isn't it ironic, though? They can pinpoint the numbers of documents allegedly found with Dopey Joe or Mike Pence. They give no numbers on any number of documents found at Mar-a-Lago. It's like they have numbers that match up when it comes to that. But when it comes to like fraudulent votes or a number of fraudulent acts, it wasn't enough to change the results. Or there's no way to tell how many fraudulent ballots there were. That kind of thing. From Patriot Alerts, here's something that ought to comfort each and every one of us. Title of the article is U.S. General Says He Can't Rule Out Aliens as More UFOs Enter American Airspace. I think Jimi Hendrix's ghost is there. That's what they would that's what they would play. I think this is the tune. Be called up from the skies.
I heard some you got your families living in cages, tall and cold. Some just stay there and dust away past the age of old. Is this true? Please let me talk to you. I just wanna know about the rooms behind your mind. Do I see a vacuum there? Just a remains for vibration. X is long ago. Things like love the world and let your fancy flow. Is this true? Please let me talk to you. Let me talk to you. I have lived here before. The days are by. And of course, this is why I'm so concerned. And I come back to find the stars displaced and the smell of a world that has burned. A smell of the world that has burned.
Yeah, so that's up from the skies, and it's, you know, literally, what are we getting now? What the hell is happening? I mean, you know, I started the show with Up, Up, and Away, which I stole from Vito's inspiration, by the way. So, yeah, U.S. General says he can't rule out aliens as more UFOs enter American airspace. U.S. General Glenn Van Herk was on a Sunday interview on Fox News, stunned the host as he said he cannot rule out aliens or extraterrestrials. They asked, have you ruled out aliens or extraterrestrials? He said, I haven't ruled out anything at this point. So February 4th, we shot down the China balloon, and we might or not, that might not be getting info on it. Friday, we shot down a second object over Alaska. Saturday, another one over the Yukon. Then Sunday, another one over Lake Huron. There was a radio anomaly, a radar anomaly also detected, but no object was found. He says, we're calling them objects, not balloons, for a reason. I mean, the Pentagon says they don't know how to shot down objects that stayed afloat. Says they don't have reason to believe they're from China. Meanwhile, China, of course, is saying we sent spy balloons, and then we're finding out that as many as 10 have been sent recently this way. I mean, what are we supposed to believe at this point? I'm just not sure what is going on with all this. Is it strictly cover-up? Is it interference being run on behalf of La Dopey Nostra? Do we have aliens living and working amongst us? I mean, you know, he didn't even touch on it during the State of the Union at all. Didn't say a word about it. Don't you think that kind of warranted addressing the American people and saying, hey, there are some logistics or some issues, but we are doing what we can. He ignored it. Totally ignored it. I mean, you got to wonder, do we have aliens here? I don't know. Here's another internet laughy. It's more an irony. Rob Schneider, formerly of Saturday Night Live, he said the same government that says it doesn't want to poke the experimental Chinese sky balloon because it might injure people is the same government that had no problems poking holes in people's arm, experimental gene therapy for a Chinese virus. Going to go to a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to discuss the shooting at Michigan State. I know it's another shooting. There's a reason I'm going to address it the way I do. I do not really feel like getting into a diatribe about it. I don't feel like getting into a kind of discussion. It's no secret how I feel about the Second Amendment. So I'm going to go to a quick break, and I'll come back, and I'll talk about the Michigan State shooting. Be right back. that, of course, the late, great Jeff Too Much to Lose from his There and Back album. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports. I am Hank Jones here at Global Patriot Radio. It can be found on Blog Talk Radio, of course, BTR or blogtalkradio.com. 7 days, 7 shows. Good stuff. If you want to interact, of course, dial 319-527-6706. You can just listen in if you want. If you want to talk, just hit the one, and I get the little hand raise signal. If you're listening online, we greatly appreciate it. So, you know, this will be the last day that I really feature any of Jeff Beck's music. I did the quiz for no longer living guitarists, great guitarists who are no longer here. And nobody got this quiz. Would have given you an opportunity to run the show for 1 hour. Tommy Bolin was the answer. Now, it was so one person did guess, but it's a family member, so that's, you know, all that. Family members ineligible, or whatever you want to call it. And they frankly didn't want to, weren't sure they wanted to come on and run the show for an hour. But, hey, they got it. But, yeah, Tommy Bolin was the one I was looking for. And so next week, I was going to do it the third Thursday, but since the first, or third Wednesday, but since the first Wednesday was on the first of the month, made it February 15th. That's a little too early. I wasn't able to get everything prepared that I wanted to do it the way I want to do it. So next week I will feature Tommy Bolin's music. I will not be doing the whole show on Tommy Bolin, so be doing the normal show. But for about the last half hour, I will sort of dedicate it to Tommy Bolin. Great guitarist, born in Sioux City, Iowa, died in Miami, passed away after a drug overdose. Ironically, this is why it's ironic. His last show was as warm-up for Jeff Beck. He was allegedly wearing Jimi Hendrix's ring when he died. Don't know if that's fact, but that was talked about on occasion. Anyway, got another internet laughy. This is from Congressman Thomas Massey. Said, if Biden shoots down the balloon, it will be the first thing he's ever done to combat inflation. And then a final little internet or media highlight comes from Arkansas Governor Sarah Sanders Huckabee, former press secretary for President Trump. She said during her Republican State of the Union rebuttal that was no longer about Democrat or Republican or liberal or conservative, but that, quote, the choice is between normal or crazy. Nailed it. The choice isn't necessarily between liberal or conservative or Democrat or Republican. It's literally a choice between normal or crazy. Okay. This week there was a mass shooting at Michigan State University in East Lansing that killed 3 and injured 5. Now, the shooter later killed himself, had no apparent motive, had no apparent connection to the university. Now, campus shootings are nothing new, unfortunately. The most infamous, probably the shooting that took place at Virginia Tech back in 2007. That actually happened at the University of Iowa in 1991. And, of course, we've had other mass murder sprees on college campuses that did not involve guns, most recently at the University of Idaho. Then back in the late 80s, early 90s, you had the University of Florida killings by convicted and executed killer Danny Rowling. Not only admitted to the Gainesville murders, but also other murders and rapes in his hometown of Shreveport, Louisiana. But, of course, as if on cue, Democrat politicians blamed gun culture, blamed the NRA, blamed Republicans in no particular order. But rather than a Hank rant, rather than discussing this, I'm going to say that for another time. I'm going to read a couple essays written several years ago after the shootings at Parkland High School in Florida and Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown. That's it. I'm reading these two essays/blog posts to speak for the time being. I just don't want to go into a long diatribe about it. As I said, everyone knows where I stand on the Second Amendment. That's it. So here's what it is. And the first is from, what is this guy's name? What the heck is this guy's name? I'm trying to find it. And he, Oh, Robert Myers. I'm not reading the header. I'm sorry. I was looking for a little violent. Okay. He says, there's no way to stop mass shootings, and you won't like it. That's right. You're not going to like it because it's going to require you to do something personally, as opposed to shouting for the government or anyone to, quote, do something. You ready? Here it is. Notice those around you who seem isolated and engage them. If every one of us did this, we'd have a culture that was deeply committed to ensuring no one was left lonely. And make no mistake, as I've written before, loneliness is what causes these shooters to lash out. People with solid connections to other people don't indiscriminately fire guns at strangers. I know what you're thinking. It's never going to work because no one is going to make the effort to connect with the strange kid sitting by himself at lunch each day. No one is going to reach out to the gawky, awkward guy at work and ask him about his weekend. Probably right, and that's an absolute shame. Because I can tell you the things that aren't going to work in this country when it comes to stopping these heinous acts. But they seem to be all anyone says when inevitably another person comes forward to inflict their tortured pain on innocent people. Number one, ban all guns. Due to the reading of the Second Amendment and the precedents established by recent Supreme Court cases, this isn't going anywhere. You need an amendment to the Constitution, and there will never be 30-plus states willing to overturn it. Never mind the multitude of good reasons for its existence, no amount of outrage will overturn it, so let's just stop. Ban all guns, part two. Ban all guns, part two. Assuming you actually could overturn the Second Amendment and outlaw every firearm in the country, then you'd have to go out and get them. Famously, there are more than guns than people in the United States. You couldn't come close to collecting them all. Further, if prohibition and the war on drugs have taught us anything, it's that those intent on breaking the law are going to do just that. Laws be damned. Number three, ban scary guns like the AR-15. Fully automatic weapons are already banned. Most of these shootings occur with a handgun, plain and simple, and these aren't going anywhere. Murder is illegal, and that doesn't seem to stop these individuals from performing these atrocious acts. Do you think if there was a ban on shotguns, that would stop them? Four, keep them out of the hands of bad people. Felons are already prohibited from owning a firearm. But let's not forget, the overwhelming majority of these mass shootings aren't done by criminals, and their guns were obtained legally. How can you know who is going to do something like this? Answer, you can't. Number five, do something about mental health. Free psychiatrist visits for everyone. Even if you could, the people that have done this haven't been mentally ill by and large. And let's not forget that medical records are private. Would you endorse mandatory psych screening for everyone and those records being sent to the government? Maybe just those who wish to own a gun? Remember, not every person who is engaged in a mass shooting has owned the gun they performed the act with. This is a complete non-starter of an issue with an insane price tag that does nothing to actually keep a person committed to violence from putting their hands on a gun. Number six, do something. Gotcha. What do you want to do? Something? Okay. What do you have in mind? I don't know, but someone needs to do something. Sure, agreed. But what? As had to say in his latest speech, how routine it's become. If you can't tell by this point in the list, there is nothing the government or any other organization can do to prevent these events. You can't effectively keep drugs out of the hands of those intent on doing drugs. You can't keep beer out of the hands of high schoolers intent on getting beer. You have a huge supply of weapons everywhere and concrete federal law protecting those weapons. You'd have as much luck passing regulation against tornadoes. It would be equally as effective. So there it is. That's God's honest truth. No entity can do anything meaningful more than is presently being done to thwart a disaffected person hell-bent on committing such an act. But you can. You can talk to your coworker for a few minutes. You can talk to the kid in your physics class that appears to be all alone. You can teach your children to do the same to make sure no one is left to feel totally isolated. Because that's the breeding ground. That's where the seeds are planted. Community is easy to take for granted. Most of us have strong family connections and healthy friendships. Most feel as though they're part of a group, be it community, religious, or work-related. But it's increasingly easy for people on the edges to withdraw and it's easy for us to forget them. No, it's comfortable to forget them. It's preferred to forget them. It's highly desired to forget them. And we have to change that. Holding a sign isn't going to do anything. Congressmen will do even less. But you can do something today, this week, this month. The people you engage may not become lifelong friends, and they don't need to be. But it could be enough to keep someone away from the darkness and isolation needed to eventually think lashing out is an effective strategy for dealing with their pain. If you're conflicted at all about the subject, I can't encourage you enough to read what I'm about to read later by Sam Harris on the subject immediately following Newtown, Connecticut. Here's the edit. Fully auto weapons are legal, but only under the strictest of conditions and at a price that makes them hardly affordable for the vast majority. For all intents and purposes, let's just call them banned. The AR-15 is not a fully auto weapon, but it is often confused with one for one based on it. So now I read this post from Sam Harris. It's called The Riddle of the Gun. This is from 2013. So I guess I was thinking Parkland, but it wasn't. Fantasists and zealots can be found on both sides of the debate over guns in America. On the one hand, many gun rights advocates reject even the most sensible restrictions on the sale of weapons to the public. On the other, proponents of stricter gun laws often seem unable to understand why a good person would ever want ready access to a loaded firearm. Between these two extremes, we must find grounds for a rational discussion about the problem of gun violence. Unlike most Americans, I stand on both sides of this debate. I understand the apprehension that many people feel toward gun culture, and I share their outrage over the political influence of the NRA. How is it that we live in a society in which one of the most compelling interests is gun ownership? Where is the science lobby? The safe food lobby? Where is the get the Chinese lead paint out of our kids' toys lobby? When viewed from any other civilized society on earth, the primacy of guns in American life seems to be a symptom of collective psychosis. Non sequitur here, folks. There are some things in this I don't agree with. So it's not that I disagree, but I just kind of pass it off. Okay, back to the article. Most of my friends do not own guns and never will. When asked to consider the possibility of keeping firearms for protection, they worry that the mere presence of them in their homes would put themselves and their families in danger. Can't a gun go off by accident? Wouldn't it be more likely to be used against me in an altercation with a criminal? I am surrounded by otherwise intelligent people who imagine that the ability to dial 911 is all the protection against violence a sane person ever needs. But unlike my friends, I own several guns and trade with them regularly. Every month or two, I spend a full day shooting with a highly qualified instructor. Good for him, by the way. This is an expensive and time-consuming habit, but I view it as part of my responsibility as a gun owner. It is true that my work as a writer has added to my security concerns somewhat, but my involvement with guns goes back decades. I have always wanted to be able to protect myself and my family, and I have never had any illusions about how quickly the police can respond when called. I have expressed my views on self-defense elsewhere. Suffice it to say, if a person enters your home for the purpose of harming you, you cannot reasonably expect the police to arrive in time to stop him. This is not the fault of the police. It is a problem of physics. Like most gun owners, I understand the ethical importance of guns and cannot honestly wish for a world without them. I suspect that sentiment will shock many readers. Wouldn't any decent person wish for a world without guns? In my view, only someone who doesn't understand violence could wish for such a world. A world without guns is one in which the most aggressive men can do more or less anything they want. It is a world in which a man with a knife can rape and murder a woman in the presence of a dozen witnesses, and none will find the courage to intervene. There have been cases of prison guards, who generally do not carry guns, helplessly standing by as one of their own was stabbed to death by a lone prisoner armed with an improvised blade. The hesitation of bystanders in these situations makes perfect sense, and diffusion of responsibility has little to do with it. The fantasies of many martial artists aside, to go unarmed against a person with a knife is to put oneself in very real peril, regardless of one's training. The same could be said of attacks involving multiple assailants. A world without guns is a world in which no man, not even a member of SEAL Team 6, can reasonably expect to prevail over more than one determined attacker at a time. A world without guns, therefore, is one in which the advantages of youth, size, strength, aggression, and sheer numbers are almost always decisive. Could be nostalgic for such a world. Of course, owning a gun is not a responsibility that everyone should assume. Most guns kept in the home will never be used for self-defense. They are, in fact, more likely to be used by an unstable person to threaten family members or to commit suicide. However, it seems to me that there is nothing irrational about judging oneself to be psychologically stable and fully committed to the safe handling and ethical use of firearms, if indeed one is. Carrying a gun in public, however, entails even greater responsibility than keeping one at home. And in most states, the laws reflect this. Like many gun control advocates, I have serious concerns about letting ordinary citizens walk around armed. Ordinary altercations can become needlessly deadly in the presence of a weapon. A scuffle that exposes a gun in a person's waistband, for instance, can quickly become a fight to the death, where the first person to get his hands on the weapon may feel justified using it in self-defense. People seem unaware that knives present a similar liability. According to Gallup, 16% of American men carry knives for personal protection. I am quite sure that most of those men have not thought through the legal, ethical, and game theoretical implications of drawing a blade in a moment of conflict. It is true that brandishing a weapon, whether a gun or a knife, sometimes preempts further violence. But, emotions being what they are, it often doesn't. And the owner of the weapon can find himself resorting to deadly force in a circumstance that would not otherwise have called for it. Some facts about guns. 55 million kids went to school on the day that 20 were massacred at Sandy Hook. Even in the United States, therefore, the chance of a child dying in school, in a school shooting, are remote. My friend Steven Pinker demonstrates in his monumental study of human violence, The Better Angels of Our Nature, our perception of danger is easily distorted by rare events. Is gun violence increasing in the United States? No, but it certainly seems to be when one recalls recent atrocities in Newtown or Aurora, Colorado. In fact, the overall rate of violent crime has fallen by 22% in the past decade and 18% in the past 5 years. Now, I'm going to interject here. Those numbers may have changed, but by and large, they apply here. We still have guns, more guns, and more violence than any other developed country, but the correlation between guns and violence in the United States is far from straightforward. 30% of urban households have at least one firearm. This figure increases to 42% in the suburbs and 60% in the countryside. As one moves away from cities, therefore, the rate of gun ownership doubles. And yet, gun violence is primarily a problem in cities. It is the people of Detroit, Oakland, Memphis, Little Rock, and Stockton who are at the greatest risk of being killed by guns. In the weeks since the massacre at Sandy Hook, advocates of stricter gun control have called for a new federal ban on assault weapons. And for reductions in the number of concealed carry permits issued to private citizens. Yeah, exactly. But the murder rate has fallen precipitously since the federal ban on assault weapons expired in 2004. And this was also a period in which millions of Americans began to carry their guns in public. Many proponents of gun control have observed that the AR-15, the gun Adam Lanza used to murder 20 children in Newtown, is now the most popular rifle in America. But only 3% of murders in the United States are committed with rifles of any type. Seventy mass shootings have occurred in the U.S. since 1982, leaving 543 dead. These crimes were horrific, but 564,452 other homicides took place in the U.S. during the same period. Mass shootings scarcely represent 0.1% of all murders. When talking about the problem of guns in our society, it is easy to lose sight of the worst violence and they become fixated on symbols of violence. The problem of gangs is distinct from the problem of guns. Gang membership answers to a variety of social needs, protection and status foremost among them. But, as is the case with many social problems, gangs answer to a need that they themselves create. A person's reputation within a gang depends upon his demonstrated willingness to harm outsiders. Therefore, the very norms by which one raises one's status within a gang makes gang membership necessary for personal safety. Needless to say, most of the resulting mayhem is accomplished with guns. Our misguided war on drugs is surely an important factor where gangs are concerned. This is another vicious circle. Like prohibition before it, the war on drugs renders the sale of illicit drugs extraordinarily profitable, while requiring that drug dealers function outside the law, protecting their investment and their turf with guns. If we ended our war on drugs, the money that finances most gang activity would disappear, as would one of the primary reasons for gang violence. No doubt, gangs would remain, along with the other sources of violent crime. But with the war on drugs abandoned, our police, courts, and departments of corrections can focus on the real problem of violence. Okay, I'm not necessarily in agreement with that. Or at least wholly. I'm not for just allowing all drugs. I'm not. But the fact remains, the war on drugs is not one that's been won. Just like the war on terror hasn't, nor has the war on poverty, nor has the war on hunger. Now here's where it gets interesting, in the context of other risks. For instance, it is estimated that 100,000 Americans die each year because doctors and nurses fail to wash their hands properly. Interesting, huh? Measured in bodies, therefore, the problem of hand washing in hospitals is worse than the problem of guns, even if we include accidents and suicides. But not all deaths are equivalent. A narrow focus on mortality rates does not always do justice to the reality of human suffering. Mass shootings are a marginal concern, even relative to other forms of gun violence, but they can cause an unusual degree of terror and grief, particularly when children are targeted. Given the psychological and social costs of certain low-frequency events, it does not seem irrational to allocate disproportionate resources to prevent them. We should also remember that mass killings do not depend on guns. Much was made in the press about the fact that on the very day 20 children were murdered in Newtown, a man with a knife attempted a similar crime at an elementary school in China. Been an epidemic of knife attacks on children, school children in China in the past years. So you see where I went with this. Obviously, I'm not going to read the rest of this article just because it goes on. And he talks about things like speed loaders and bump stocks. Okay, yeah, that's fine. That's, you know, whatever. People talk about that. You know, it's like the Pulse in Orlando. I am pretty much convinced that that was not a Sig Sauer MCX. Whatever, 80, 60 or 80. I'm convinced of that. I've listened to the initial tape, the initial audio. And the reason I know this, I was able to, through an auction, take part in a SWAT training class with a local law enforcement agency, where as part of that training, we were allowed to fire on both semi-auto and auto. I'm telling you, that was not a semi-auto weapon. And you can talk about bump stocks. You can talk about whatever the hell you want. You cannot fire that fast, except on full auto. It's just not possible. I maintain that they lied about that. And so I will pontificate a bit. Okay. Have you noticed, you know, Joe Biden, Dopey Joe, talked about guns at the State of the Union. Get guns out of people's hands. Gonna take guns off the street. Gotta have gun control. Have you noticed every time this kind of stuff happens, it's like on cue. As I said earlier, it's on cue that Democrat politicians blame gun culture. or the Republicans or the NRA, and I get it, no particular order. It's like on cue. I mean, when there's pending legislation, Congress or a state legislature, gun crime gets publicized in the news. And in this case, again, you know, they're perfecting their art, if you will. And look, this isn't a conspiracy theory. This isn't like, I'm not sitting here with a tinfoil hat. I mean, every time something like this comes up, some kind of legislation or a statement or a desire, a gun crime occurs like this. And it's used to try and enact more strict gun control measures. And it's, you look, I agree. Nobody likes these mass shootings. But when put in context, when put in perspective, when put into statistical categories, it's still pretty minor. I mean, it's just not a significant statistic in our death rates. It's not a significant statistic in type of death. Is it a statistic? Absolutely. But why else make such big deal of it? You know, you're not hearing about the car accident, unless the kids were drunk or chased by white cops. You don't hear about the car accident that kills six teens or four teens or whatever. You just don't. Yeah, they use it. Yeah, they use the statistics. Yeah, they use these crimes. I mean, if you notice in this one, no apparent motive, no apparent connection. Really? How deeply have they dug? I mean, they can tell you everything about what the people involved in January 6th. Absolutely everything. I mean, stuff about Ashley Babbitt was released so quickly after she was killed. But you notice the officer that shot her? How well they hid that, how well they tried to smokescreen that. So don't tell me it's not available what this guy's motive was or his connection. Maybe there isn't a connection. There's a motive. People don't just get up and take guns with no reason whatsoever. Yeah, something needs to be done. Absolutely. To stave off these kind of crimes. Just like something needs to be done to keep people from sleeping on the streets or going hungry or driving drunk or crashing trains in Ohio and then setting fire to all the chemicals immediately as a controlled burn. What in the hell is going on with that, by the way? But so no, let's not let them cloud the issue. You know where I stand on the Second Amendment. You know where I stand on firearms ownership and where I stand on responsible firearms ownership. That's no secret. It's no secret to anyone who knows me. It's no secret to anyone who's ever listened to this show where I stand. But I'll tell you, when we start seeing stuff about mental health, we can listen a bit. Well, here's stuff about isolation and bullying. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, don't be. I mean, I had a guy from my high school that posts on our reunion page on Facebook 4 years later. I mean, we were talking about our 20th or our 40th anniversary reunion, 40th high school reunion a couple years ago. It was delayed because of COVID. But literally, this kid will – kid, he's my age – this guy will post, high school was terrible for me. I probably won't ever see any of you again. People reach out to him, try to say, you know, so appreciate, you know, try and come back. And so sorry you felt that way. And so sorry you felt like you were treated that way. And even his responses sometimes they're nice. And thank you for, you know, for caring. Other times he'll say, I don't remember you talking to me. Goodbye. Yeah, this guy's clearly had a terrible experience in high school. I didn't know him. I knew who he was, but I didn't know him. It's true. I never did talk to him. I didn't have anything in common with him. I mean, I was sports that I did or whatever. But yeah, this guy feels terribly isolated still. Or I shouldn't say maybe isolated, but he feels still terribly bitter. I understand that. Everybody had a rough time at some point in school. Even the popular people, even the you know, whether it's the jocks or the nerds or the freaks, whatever. Everybody had those moments at times. Now, some were just bullies, but they still had those moments, but they had them as bullies. Bullies themselves are a pretty good case study of psychological issues. You know, it's like they say, you know, some of those little cute little memes that come up. Bully that you hate was beaten up by his own dad that morning. That kind of thing. So, yeah. And that's a huge part of it. That's how we have to treat people. That's our response. We should reach out. But the fact remains, we are going to have mass shootings. The sad part, though, is that we're now going to have an increase in virtue signaling on every level for some reason. So, no, I'm not in favor of mass shootings, obviously. I'm not in favor of gun control either. I'm not in favor of irresponsible firearms use. Don't we already have laws against illegal firearms use? Am I not correct there? Yeah, I thought so. It's already illegal to go shooting someone. So when you say to someone as an argument, well, the Second Amendment applies to all Americans. Yes, it does. But like other amendments, some of those go out the window when they're abused or violated. So no, we don't need more gun laws. We don't need better this or better that. I mean, my gosh, we put walls around our own capital to protect these people. And yet they're going to tell us that we cannot depend on our own form of protection? Sorry, no thanks. So that's it. That's my feeling on this. And I wanted to read these articles because it's a different, you know, it's not totally where I come from, but there's some great points made. Isolation, bullying, all a part of it. Feeling of being alone and ignored. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's where it stands. Okay, so we're going to close out the show. A song I don't think I got to play during all this stuff of Jeff Beck. It's called The Pump. It's from his album, There Back. And it's about 5.5 minutes. I do urge you that if you're listening to stay listening, because about the last half of the song is a brilliant exit coda, if you will. It's just where the tune change comes. It's called The Pump. It was used in the movie Risky Business. And give it a listen, and then I'll come back and sign off. And there you have it, the pulp from Jeff Beck. That is our final real play out of playing his stuff as we exit or get into it each week. Great stuff. Over the last half of that song, it's just a brilliant, as I said, coda. After the second goes into that free flow, it's a solo, but it's just really the song. He's just singing the song with his guitar. It's absolutely brilliant. It's absolutely incredible guitar playing and an incredible song. Upcoming stuff, Avid Mike will be back in a couple of weeks. We're going to talk about the Iowa Hawkeye recruiting class for 2023, kind of once it's finalized, and maybe talk about what directions might happen after spring ball. Of course, Hawkeye Mike will continue to be back as well to talk stuff. And at some point, we'll get the crew back in, not just Hawkeye Mike, but Indy Hawk and hopefully T. Bodie, maybe even Brother Tommy. We might make Brother Tommy force him into his return, as long as he hasn't adopted the Illini as his he's adopted them as his college football team. Let's hope he's not adopted them as his college basketball team. But, yeah, we'll talk Final Four or just March Madness in general. What are the Hawkeye chances? Still sort of teetering at this point. Had a good win Sunday, but, you know, what will happen? Will we be able to hold form down the stretch, hold serve at home, et cetera, et cetera? And, of course, we're going to continue to follow this stuff with these balloons, not just the Chinese spy balloon, but other objects that have been caught flying over our airspace that we have shot down, but with no real explanation afterward of what they are. So keep on, stay vigilant. Remember, this is our country, not theirs. Whether it's China, Ukraine, or just our politicians, this is our country, not theirs. And if we don't fight to keep it or fight to take it back, then we deserve exactly what we get. Nothing more, nothing less. In the meantime, folks, have a great rest of your week. Have a great weekend this weekend. And we will be back next week with more of the news, and including maybe some more sports. And, of course, as I said, some playing of some Tommy Bolin, great guitarists that are no longer here series. In the meantime, I bid you a farewell for tonight. God bless, and God bless America. Even AOC. Good night, folks.
Bye-bye.